Good morning and welcome to the Project Joy radio show. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
All right, here was our assignment from yesterday. No one has loved anyone the way everyone wants to be loved. Is that true? Certainly we know what the author is pointing at, and we sense that if that were a universal truth, it would be distressing. The implication is that our desire to be loved is doomed, hopeless. No one has ever loved anyone the way we want to be loved. Ah, but the Buddha teaches us something very different, something exciting and hopeful. Each of us has one person to save, oneself, and the way that person is saved is through unconditional love. So yes, in the conventional understanding of love, it's pretty unlikely that anyone could be successful in meeting another's definition of loved. But in the spiritual, eternal, ending suffering, pure, undisturbed consciousness, slipping into all consciousness understanding of love, oh yes, possible, doable, and with practice, very likely. Today, remember that if you want to be loved, you must become the person who loves. Record and listen. All right, shall we hear from our first caller?
Yes, please.
First caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, wow. Izata speaking. You weren't in my bag today.
I know. We didn't know. Yes, we couldn't tell it was you. Hello there.
Exactly. Hello. Oh, you know, this quote was so interesting because before starting practice, I would have believed it, you know, like this idea that being loved in that way was impossible. But, you know, after starting practice, not only I believe it, like, because of how I love myself or of how project, you know, the Sangha loves me or this, but also for how I realized how much my parents love me, which I had never understood so deeply before. I'm amazed. If I think of how I could miss that, I'm speechless.
Oh, that's so big, isn't it? That's so big that when we touch into that unconditional love, we feel it for ourselves, and we recognize the love that others are giving that conditioning wouldn't let us accept or realize.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet your parents are so happy.
Yes, you know, it's all telling each other how much we love each other. It's really fun.
Yes, exactly. Because they've been loving you since before you were you, right? And then because of what happens with all of us, we grow up not being able to tell. You know, conditioning, ego, just wants to focus on everything that's wrong and all of the disappointments and all of the hurt feelings and I didn't get what I wanted and if they loved me, they would. And then we get to this place of realizing, oh my gosh, without ego, there's just love everywhere.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And how the projected non-love was totally projected, it was totally born from ego, you know. So
yes.
Cool to...
Mm-hmm. It's so great. Yeah, it's so great to realize that. To see how many of our problems just disappear when we slip into unconditional love.
Yes.
They just disappear. It's just not a problem. All right. Well, thank you so much, Izota.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
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 When we slip into unconditional love, all our problems disappear, Sherry. I mean, it is so true that we have to get to the point where we can see love rather than see ego in order for us to be able to know love.
And that's what moves everything from problem to opportunity, gift.
All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini and Sherry. This is Tracy.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi. So I kind of don't know exactly how to word this. And so I've been practicing a lot of unconditional love with a recorder in times where I'm processing a lot around relationship, a guidance in the Zen, in the Enneagram class was, you know, it doesn't matter if someone doesn't listen to you as long as I'm being heard. So I've been really practicing hearing. And what I'm finding in relationship is the person I'm in relationship with isn't interested in processing or isn't interested in bringing awareness to things that are occurring. And it feels like within me, like I see how if things aren't being brought to awareness, then there's a, conditioned habit of, moving away from and wanting to move towards. So I'm doing that with the recorder. And I think it was Jill that spoke early in the week around being at the retreat in Pennsylvania and including others with her own processing and what a gift that was. So I'm just wondering if there's like a tidbit that could be offered. It feels like, anyway, if there's anything that maybe you could offer around that.
Well, you know, Tracy, it seems to me that we get to this juncture in relationships. And relationship, that's everything. That's, you know, what you do for a living, what you read for entertainment, what you, everything, how we relate to everything. That so this is another person. So you're in this relationship, and the person that you're in relationship with is not interested in practicing awareness the way you are. So you can take that on your own, and you can practice, because we can practice anywhere with anything, right? And we also are not obligated to, as far as I can tell. So, you know, if we look at all of the history of something like marriage and property and children and, that whole thing, that can make sense as an institution that helps society function more smoothly, if we want to put it that way. But is that the same as there is any inherent benefit to anything in particular? Probably not, as long as we are clinging to a form rather than and that becoming a reason not to look deeper. Now, that was convoluted even for me. So did you go with me on that one?
Well, the part that, the institution is, it would be great for me to re-listen to, is that there's the structure of it, which I'm in relationship, and then there's the looking at deeper, which is, I think it was said yes in yesterday's call or one of the calls this week when Ashwini said that it was when it was brought up in precepts of we're divorcing ego and we're in love with life. And so it feels like when he is habitually in a process of second guessing, and I try humor, I try going with, I've just tried different types of techniques, things to be around it, and there's a place of like, I don't know what else to do, you know? So there's a place of, I want to divorce that within myself and practicing patience of it within another person. And at what point do you just say, wow, this is what they're choosing. Okay, no problem, you know?
Yes.
You know, I want to divorce them, Tracy.
Right, Tracy, for me, this is one of the great benefits of Zen. There are no right answers. There are no wrong answers. There are no mistakes. There are no shoulds. And there is karma with everything.
Yeah.
Right? And we can't know what that is. So we make our choices and we get what we get. But the idea that it has to be a certain way, that there's a right person way, then it's easy for us to fall into a conditioned orientation. And the right thing to do could be, I got to get out of this relationship because this is not good for me. The right person thing to do could be, I've got to stay here because if I'm the right spiritual person, I can be all right in any circumstances, right? And that neither of those is... That duality is not the one we want to pursue, right? So we get back here, and it's taking conscious responsibility for what I'm choosing.
Yes, conscious responsibility for what I'm choosing and tying it back into what I think Jill was saying, including someone in your processing. Can you just give me like a sentence as to how that might look, like around second guessing?
Well, it's the thing that I do encourage people with who have children, right? That instead of trying to fix them or change them or teach them, we do our processing in front of them. So, I watch myself get really angry when that happens, because for me it's really important that we not hurt other people or that we not destroy the environment. So I work with being really... with the level of upset that I feel, and I'm getting to the place of realizing it's actually disappointment rather than okay? Now, when you're doing this with grown-ups, they might leave the room before you finish your processing, but that's okay, because have your recorder on and know the processing is for you, but you're not keeping anything secret, and you're not trying to fix or change somebody else.
Okay. I'm going to practice with that.
All right, good. Let us know. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you so much. Thanks,
Bye-bye.
Jenny.
Thanks, Tracy. It seems to be the hardest place in practice at some level, right, Sherry, that all of the processing is, all of what I experience is for me to look at. And so resolving it with another person is the content and not the process.
Yes.
Yeah,
because if we were on our own, it is difficult to see stuff when we're on our own, because you know, we're just referring to our own egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, and yes, if we're present, insight is dropping in, but when we're around other creatures, then we really get to see stuff about what's operating us that's difficult to see when there aren't others. So I think that's probably the real reason the Buddha left us with Sangha, you know, because there are just so many people, so many different orientations, and we get to see, how do I relate to that?
All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Beth in Mountain View.
Well hello, Beth.
I love that last conversation for so many reasons. And what dropped in for me was today's assignment or yesterday's assignment about how we are the
the in a great position to love ourselves regardless of what anybody else is doing, and just how kind that is, how absolutely easeful it is to be wholly focused on loving myself through whatever situation I'm in, with whether it includes another person or not.
Yes. And, you know, Beth, I want to, at this juncture, I want to take the opportunity to clarify something, because, you know, in the new age and in the, you know, the larger culture, there's a lot about self-love. And it's, you know, it's all lowercase, which is such a wide open doorway for ego to come through. So that gets translated into, so whatever I want, whatever I think, whatever I do is okay. And we lose sight, and I'm not saying this is where you're coming from. I'm just wanting to address this. So there's a change in consciousness. Without a change in behavior, we're going to lose that change in consciousness. So there's a danger, and I see it growing in our practice, where I'm not in self-hate any longer, so hey, whatever I do is fine. And that is not where we're going, right? So the loving oneself, to me, it's having compassion for oneself, or holding oneself in unconditional love. So, you know, I use the capital letters to show that we're not talking about ego, really digging ego, because that's such a dangerous place for us to get into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes back to another conversation that happened at Center, which was about will. What we got, how did we call it? Self-will. I know we talk about it as willingness, but the will that
free
we
will.
Got. Free will, thank you.
Free will, yeah. Yep.
The will we got, you know, in the whole creation of, what, however we were created, what, sorry, I think I'm messing up.
However,
but anyway,
all this happened.
How we ever got here. But the free will that we have is that free will to choose love, that we're not a slave to it, that love never says you must love. You must, you know,
that
it becomes from this place that we all know, but that we just haven't been able to tap into because of that ego layer that wants to corrupt it into, well, self free will means, yes, I get to do whatever I want. I'm going to sleep in every day, and I'm going to never do the dishes again, and I'm going to, you know, whatever.
And I love me, and I love
and
exactly
I still love
the way I am. yes, exactly, and I don't beat myself up over it. And that so all of our language, all of the, you know, all of this, the ways that we talk about things that are attempts to point us beyond ego can easily be co-opted by ego. And it all sounds exactly the same. And, of course, ego loves that version of it, the I never have to do the dishes and I never get another beating. Yeah? And, and of course, that's okay. It's just that we need to know there is a karma that comes with that that is not going to be happy.
Well, yeah, and I find in my experience that there might be a day or two of that, and then life moves.
Yes.
It's a clear shift. It's a clear shift of, you know, it's not even an I want to do the dishes. I just find myself doing the dishes. I find myself doing the things that take care of, well, if you want, capital S self or the human, or, you know, that really respond to life.
Yes. And again, to underline this, there that is true for you because you practice. That is not true for everyone.
Yeah.
And if we look around at the world, we can see that. There's a great deal. And we can all remember being in that place 100% of the time, I bet. That, no, this is all about me. And it's me getting for me what I want for me. And there's very little awareness of the repercussions, the impact, the you know, the what this is doing to the world, to the environment, to other people, to creatures. That's just not part of the equation, and it's such an easy place for us to fall into when we start listening to ego.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. I have been experiencing great love of life lately, and it's been just delightful,
glorious
to be here and to have it. To have it supported with you and Ashwini and Sangha and all that we have.
It's kind of the best, isn't it?
It's the best. I'm going to stay there.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Beth. It is so true that it gets confusing, right, Sherry, that because it's such the personal is so much a part of how we see the world, rather than the universal.
Yes.
And so that self corrupts, or the self is the lens through which we see anything. So self-love has been mutated to mean the love of the ego. But there is a way of loving life that is impersonal but in form, which is what I think we're pointing at.
Yes, exactly. So we try to talk about it in practice as unconditional love for the human incarnation. So in the same way that we would experience unconditional love for that dog or that cat or that plant or that mountain or that tree or the sky, the air, the water, the whatever it is. Because none of it is personal. It's all an expression of the same unconditional. And so to be in that, yes, there's absolute love for the human being that you call I and I call you, included in that, not separate from that and more special than everything else.
Mm. Well, Sherry, I just ran into a technical difficulty. My internet connection just went down, so I actually lost a cue. I'm just connecting right back up. So if you give me a second, I should bring the application back up again. So just hang on.
We shall wait patiently. We are meditators.
All right. It looks like I'm back up again. Here we go. Hang on. This is our next caller.
Hey, Sherry and Ashwini. It's Jen in Rhinebeck.
Well, hello, Jen.
Hello. Oh, that was really fun because I was actually standing there being like, oh, please be me. Please be me. And I realized, like, that is not how I would have been reacting 5 years ago.
Yeah, not me. Okay, not me.
Exactly.
Only a few minutes more to go. Okay, not me. Yeah. And Jen, if I may, per our last conversation, ego would point to that because it could make it two sides of the duality. You know, oh, God, not me, or oh, please me. And those could both be coming from ego. But there's a way in which the oh, me, oh, me, oh, me is an excitement about participating that is not coming from ego. And I project that's the one you're coming from.
That's it, totally, because that last conversation, all the conversations, but it's like that last conversation was like, yes, exactly. I'm just finding myself doing the dishes, and I didn't have to force myself. You know, there didn't have to be any conversation about it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I'm seeing specifically around this assignment was, I was also doing an assignment of, for the recording and listening class, and it was a version of the love letter to yourself. And it was so fascinating because as I was reading the letter into my recorder, what the mentor just stepped in and said something that wasn't in my letter, and she said, I just love the way you love. And in that moment, it was like, this is going to sound very sort of academic, but there was no me, there was no mentor, there was no object or subject, there was no lover and the thing that was being loved. It was just love, like as an energy.
Uh-huh. There was just an energy that in this particular circumstance would get the label, the name that goes with it, is love. It could have had a lot of, I project, it could have had a lot of labels.
Could have had acceptance. Could have had,
kindness.
Yeah, yeah. It could
respect,
have had joy,
generosity,
kindness,
goodness.
Caring.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Totally. But it was, it was so great. It was like, so, so I guess part of the theme here, right, is that there's this, like when the, when that self is out of the way, like things can just happen. When ego is out of the picture, you know, dishes just happen, you know, cooking good food just happens. Like, you know, the recognition of care and love and generosity, all of that just happens.
Yes, exactly so. And to bring it back to one of the essential pieces of our practice, when it's where attention is. When attention is on ego, then it's all about me. It's very small. It's what's wrong, something missing, problems, what am I going to do, got to figure it out. And when attention turns away from that, there's just life. There's there's just what truly is. And what is form being animated. And part of that form's activities, participation, is cooking, doing the dishes, cleaning up the house, doing work.
Doing the laundry, which I can't stand.
Doing the laundry.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah, I can't stand. I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things, doesn't it?
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
But, you know, what I would like less is not having any clothes.
Or, yeah, absolutely. It's
if
true.
I have more opinions about that, or wearing dirty clothes day after day after day, it might get some opinions going about that, too. So that, that's what it is, right? I doesn't want to do laundry. I doesn't want any of the other permutations for that either. It's just I doesn't like a lot of things.
It's just contrary.
Yeah. It's just contrary because that's how you stay separate. Yeah. Whatever is going on, I don't like it. That's what makes me different. That's what makes me special. That's why you should look at me and pay attention to me, believe what I say, and try to please me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah, or not, exactly. Or because then I have more fuel for the for complaining.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah, it's way more fun. For us when we don't. All right. Thank you, Jen.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Thanks, Jen. No, what dropped in for me around that, Sherry, is it would be something that the mentor would say, right? I love the way you love. Because that's life loving life, right? Life loving the way life loves. It's just that it doesn't resonate for that separate self that most often doesn't love and therefore can't relate. Yeah. So that's what's listening. There's an identification with that. And we go, well, I actually, me, love?
No.
It's just
no.
Yes, it's that thing we were talking about what mirror are we looking into? Right?
Yeah.
Is it the mirror that reflects life or the mirror that reflects ego?
Yeah, and it can all look and sound the same, can't it? You know, I love the way you love. Well, how egocentric is that? Well, if you weren't there. But if you were there for the experience, there's no ego at all.
All right, that brings us to the end of another show, and here's our assignment. Let us be kinder to one another, Aldous Huxley's last words. It's probably not a stretch for us to recall that in any given moment, life can be very difficult. We try hard to be cheerful, optimistic, positive, and grateful. And yet on occasion, we're simply taken over by the negativity around us and inside our own head. When we're struggling, the smallest act of kindness can be a godsend, a ray of light in a dark moment. We know that for ourselves, which makes this a perfect time to extrapolate. If it's true for me, I'm going to project it's true for you. Kindness is a godsend for me, and I'm going to bet it's a godsend for you. Today, given that's our experience, let's be kinder to one another every chance we get. Recording this.
All right. I want to do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Just
thank you, Ashwini.
More kindness.
Thank you, Sherry. Yeah. And I guess
thanks,
we will
everybody.
Talk. Yes. We
oh,
will see each other
oh, it's
on Monday.
Friday. Oh, that's right. Okay. All right. Good. Well, everybody have a great couple of days. And you too, Ashwini. And we'll meet again soon. Thanks for everything.
Okay. Take
care. Bye-bye.